I'm Nathan.
And I'm Emily. And this is Twice as Less Not Perfect,
a messy marriage podcast. We're here to get real with you about the fun and the flaws,
the grief and the gratitude,
the mirth and the myth of marriage.
We all know that partnerships are powerful, but they're also pretty messy. And getting to the good stuff can take a lot of trial and error.
So join us while we talk about our mistakes and the lessons we've learned about relationships.
So far.
Because it's not always perfect.
But it's usually worth it.
CJ.
Begin.
Welcome.
That's a Taekwondo joke.
Sure is.
If any of you practice the art of the foot and the fist, what is it? Oh, the shame.
Oh, no. The way of the foot and
the way
fist.
Of the foot and the fist. That was close. So, what
the
are we
talking? The path of the foot and the fist. The walkway.
Avenue. Of the hand,
the moving
and the
sidewalk
heel.
Of the foot and the fist.
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap. Excellent.
Yeah, good. Here we are. This is a relationship podcast.
But today, we're going to talk about how you can use Taekwondo to kick each other's asses.
That's right. So we had a podcast a couple weeks ago about fighting.
Right.
And this is a little bit similar in terms of, like, I guess this framework that you carry through Taekwondo practice can be applied to conflict in other ways as well.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right. It's like a high block of stubbornness.
Or a single knife hand strike of resentment.
Exactly.
If you've been listening and following along with us the last several months, you might remember that we began this Taekwondo journey together last July.
That was July, which is crazy.
July of 2019.
Yeah. And we've now been doing Taekwondo virtually longer than we've been doing it in person, which is crazy.
We moved to the virtual platforms in March in 2020. And for a while in the summer, we kind of got together with masks in the park, but then
We had to stop.
It got cold and things got a little worse in the pandemic realm.
Yeah.
So, but we've been doing Taekwondo virtually. We have a little room, our dojang room, where we set up our computer and we kick the air and
punch
the air and sometimes each other or
sometimes
at each other.
Or accidentally every now and again. It happens.
Every once in a while a rib gets kicked.
It's cool. It's cool.
All good.
It's all part of it. So, you know, and the cool thing about Taekwondo is while obviously it's been very good for us generally, but there's a lot about how you go about it and about the practice that has been really good for our relationship. And so there's the sort of obvious ways, and then there's sort of the ways we're going to talk about today, which is more around the tenets of Taekwondo. But before we get to that, just kind of as an overall sense of kind of how Taekwondo has kind of changed our approach to life and how it's helped us deal with quarantine and how it's helped us deal with each other in kind of a lot of interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea of it's been something that we've been doing together. And I was thinking about this the other day, how it's cool to do something together because no one has any sort of expertise about it. You know, I can't say, like, well, you should do it this way. And, you know, we've talked about that in, like, the workout episode about fitness. Sometimes it's hard to do fitness with somebody who's really good at something.
Yeah.
And you're not yet. It can kind of...
It's not as fun. And you get to sort of boost each other up and encourage each other and work through stuff together at the same level.
Yeah. And we get to see each other's, like, different approaches. I think there's such a cool thing about literally doing the exact same move, the exact same thing, and yet seeing this difference in application.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Emily has really, really good balance and really good, like, flexibility and precision, like, very focused, you know, and like, it's fascinating to watch because I'm like, I marvel at that.
But you have such great power.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you're very fast.
Yeah.
You're very fast.
I have speed.
Yeah.
And it's so, it's, we learn from each other. I learn a lot from watching you, and there's this sort of flow that we find, and you recognize each other's strengths and you recognize how we all have different approaches to get to the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's just cool. And, you know, and I think it's made us more in tune and more in sync with each other. We have a shared sense of physicality.
Yeah.
You know, that we are kind of consistently engaging in.
It's nice. I've definitely noticed that as we've continued on this journey and moved up in the ranks and practiced together, we're a lot more in sync. And, you know, not just because our last episode was The Sound of Silence. We had this day of silence and then we practiced Taekwondo in silence. And that was fascinating because we were super aware of each other. Mm-hmm. And I would say we haven't done another one of those silence days since, but we've been more in sync with Taekwondo since we just like tuned in to each other a little more, which is really cool. So there are these tenets of Taekwondo. So it's, well, Taekwondo is this, you know, practice of fighting, to put it really basic, in a really basic way. And we will spare you all the details of the history of Taekwondo and why it came to be. But there are also these tenets, which are these, the definition of a tenet is an opinion, principle, or doctrine that a person holds or maintains as true. Mm-hmm. So there are these sort of sets of, it's like a moral code,
right?
Would you say, that Taekwondo students and masters take through their practice, carry with them, internalize, apply every day in class, and in life, hopefully.
Yeah.
And we've taken those and we've talked about them a little bit in class. We've discussed as a group which ones we feel we're strong in and which we feel like we could still work on. Mm-hmm. And so Nate and I have been thinking for a while about how these might apply to relationships as well. So we're here to talk about those a little bit.
So the first one is modesty. And so the general definition of modesty as it relates to Taekwondo is to be humble and unassuming in your own life. And so how does that come into play in our marriage?
Right. Are you asking me right now?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Well, I mean, I'd like to start, I think, by talking about how it, for me, it helps to focus on how it applies to Taekwondo and then think about life and think about how it relates to the relationship, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, Taekwondo, it's about, you know, not being braggadocious about your skills or whatever you bring to the table that might be a skill that might be more honed than other people in the class. You know, it's being humble and also recognizing that there's still a lot to learn. And, you know, I feel like I walk around with a lot of modesty, just in life, to a fault, where I actually like defer to other people's opinions and ideas because I just assume that mine are lesser. But when it comes to the relationship, I like this idea of there's still a lot that I can learn. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't discuss this before, but I'm just realizing in this moment, like, I think it's really important to stay humble in a relationship. And no matter what kind of experience you've had or how good you think you might be at something, there's still a lot to be learned, particularly about how you approach the relationship and also about your partner. Mm-hmm. That's something that I would like to carry with me more moving forward.
Yeah, I think back, especially earlier in our marriage and in our relationship when we were kind of figuring each other out, there is that sort of back and forth of like, well, this is the way I do it. And because this is the way I do it, I'm going to continue to do it this way. And you can
join me.
You can join me, or, you know.
Or we'll fight about
it.
That's how I feel like I approach
it. But, you know, I feel like early on, there was not a lot of this approach from us of like, here's how I've done it. And maybe I should be open to the fact that there could be a better way, a more effective way.
Or just a different way that's equally as valid.
Right. Yeah. Just a different way that's equally as valid. Yeah. And I think that's something that I notice in myself is, you know, I am opinionated and I have very set ideas about what works, what doesn't, the order things should happen. And sometimes I don't verbalize what I think those steps should be. And then when those steps don't happen in that way, I get very like, well, we should have just done it like this and this and this. And instead of being humble in the idea that there are many pathways to this same endpoint, mm-hmm. and it didn't have to be my pathway because here we are, we got there. Mm-hmm. You know, I especially am like guilty of this, like after the fact.
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm like, yeah, she's looking at me like, are you?
No, I'm just curious if you have an example. I'm just curious.
But like something will have happened. It's over. It's been completed. And I will look back on it and be like, well, but we should have done these and these steps.
It's interesting because I don't see it that way, actually. Like I see you as not being able to proceed unless it's done your way.
That's also true.
Okay.
That's also true. You know, so I think, you know, being humble in terms of, I don't think either of us are people who brag. You know, I don't think we feel the need to like trumpet our accomplishments. I don't think we try to make one of us feel more important than the other.
There's not a sense of showing off.
Right. However, I will say early in our relationship, especially, and I'm just thinking of this now, we were not humble in terms of our worth as a couple. Mm-hmm. I remember like when we were going through hard times, we had that feeling of like, we're so above this. Like, we've got it.
Compared to
other couples, yeah. Like, we've got it together. And we were not looking around and looking at other problems, other issues that couples were having, people breaking up, people getting divorces, people having bad relationships or relationships that we didn't understand.
Yeah.
And thinking that we were better than that.
We were doing that for
sure. Until we weren't.
Yeah.
And that was a humbling experience.
Well, I think it was the last episode where I was saying, remember how judgy we used to be, or at least I used to be, about couples we'd see who just sat in silence and never talked to each other? And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, they must be miserable. I never want to have a relationship like that. And now I'm like, well, there's something to that.
Yeah.
There's something to
just
being at peace with each other in silence.
Yeah.
But it's stuff like that. And it's also like, you see another couple going through some hard stuff. And I remember being like, well, they obviously don't have it together the way we do. Yeah. And what did we know? We were like 25.
Anything. Yeah. We didn't get married super early. And I think that also gave us a sense of maybe a little overconfidence. I'm like, we didn't get married right out of the gate. You know, we weren't 20, we 21.
I mean,
you know, we were older.
We were 25.
Yeah, but we didn't get married like right out of high school, right out of college.
Nobody does that anymore.
I know, it's true. But
but yeah.
But I remember that.
We felt like we had experience.
We had a little, you know, we were living in New York. We had some things figured out.
There's a whole like superiority to
complex. Yeah, well, I lived in New York, so I can figure out this goddamn marriage thing. Because, you know, I ride the F train, so.
I miss it. Sometimes I miss that New Yorker superiority.
Yeah, you don't tell me anything about marriage. I've seen rats fight over a piece of pizza and then shank each other.
We can get through anything. So, yeah, I think that's a good point that we were not overly humble.
As a couple, we were not,
And I think due to that, we blinded ourselves to some real problems that we should have been dealing with and had to eventually.
And then eventually. We got taken down a peg or two or three.
Well, we left New York. That was part of it.
New York.
Like, you mean we're not better than everybody?
Oh, no. We're not New Yorkers anymore? Oh, no. Okay.
So that's modesty.
That's modesty. Okay. The next one, and I think this is a really interesting one. I love this one.
Me
so this
too.
Is perseverance, which, you know, in terms of Taekwondo, it means, you know, never giving up and pushing past barriers. And I think we get to model that a lot. For me in Taekwondo, this whole issue of flexibility, I'm like not flexible. And it's like, hate stretching. It makes me miserable. I have super tight hamstrings, but it's just this thing that I just have to do every time. And I don't ever like it. I'm like, never like it. Every time. I'm like, this is the worst. I hate stretching so much. But I keep doing it and it keeps getting a little bit better and a little less hateful. And I
just like our relationship.
Just keep doing it until you hate it less.
One thing I was reading about perseverance in terms of Taekwondo is also the idea of patience.
Yeah.
which when I think of perseverance, I think keep going, don't give up, you know, determination. And that's all true. Uh-huh. But in order to do that, you have to have a degree of patience.
Yeah.
Because you may not be seeing the results you want to see right away.
Perseverance might sometimes even mean inaction. It might be holding steady or holding still or just writing something out for a period of time. So, I think perseverance in terms of our marriage is, I think, one we've actually done very well with. You know, I think there have been times where we easily could have been like, well,
this is too
that's
hard.
That's it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there were times where we could have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we maybe wanted to.
Yeah.
And, but we kept at it.
Yes.
And we persevered.
Yeah. And like marriage is an exercise in perseverance. I think more out of all of these things, it is the essence of perseverance more than just about anything in life I can think of, because it's a daily thing that you have to work through. And
it's like
also,
we talked about in our first episode, you choose every day to be with this person.
Right.
Now, that's assuming you're both decent people and there's nothing like abusive or horrible going on. I think, you know, we can get into in some of these other tenets, how that would pair with perseverance.
But. And I think it's that what's cool about perseverance and the way we talk about it, it's that idea of it's another one of those things that's internal first. And so many of these tenets are internal to external. It's like you deal with that thing internally first so that then you can begin to address it in the external world around you.
Right.
And until you are dealing with it internally, you can't even begin to engage in that with others. And I think perseverance is a really good practice to keep kind of front and center.
I think we've all had to really bring perseverance to the forefront this last year in terms of external goings on and things, internal and external, you know, really like adopting that and everybody, you know, I think everybody to a degree has had to do that. Yeah. And I think we're still here together. We've managed to do it.
We've managed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that feels like a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you think perseverance for us has changed over the years?
What it looks like, you mean?
Yeah.
Probably. I'm not sure I can verbalize how. Could you?
Sure. I think early on, I viewed perseverance in this sort of get through it. Whatever was not good, whatever was difficult, whatever was challenging, I viewed it very much that it was something with the end in mind as opposed to a constant process.
Oh.
And I viewed it very external. It was like I viewed perseverance as here's an external challenge situation, something I don't like, something that's giving me anxiety or angst or upsetting me or frustrating me. Mm. And perseverance was something you put in play to get through that. And then it is over.
To the end of it.
Oh, you know,
well, you're very task oriented.
Right.
And right. Would you say that like, that's sort of a way that you sometimes will view certain things or issues is like, okay, I have to get from A to B.
Yeah.
How do I get there as efficiently and, you know, unscathed as possible?
Yeah. And especially when we were younger and when we were first married, especially the first 4 years.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, let's just get through it.
And yes.
Now I view perseverance as more of a state of being.
It's a practice.
It is a practice. It is something I am involved with and engaging with all the time. It's not something I'd be like, ah, cool. No perseverance needed for the time being.
Right.
But I'll be ready when I need to be persevering again. And and I view it much more now as this thing that I have to be constantly kind of attuned to and be mindful of and be putting in practice. And it looks 1,000 different ways, you know, on 1,000 different days, right? It's like today perseverance looks like I have to get through this crazy schedule.
Uh-huh.
And I know that I'm not going to be able to focus on you or focus on our house or focus on other things that need to happen. So I'm going to, how do I persevere in getting through this this very specific event or period of time. But then other days, it's like, I'm feeling this complete lack of connection or communication, or I'm feeling really frustrated with you. How do I persevere through that today? And so I think I view it more as this ever-changing thing now.
Yeah.
As opposed to this like set of obstacles laid out in front of
That's
me.
That's a great observation.
Yeah.
So our next tenet is self-control. This is a good one for us. Ooh, would you say that this is an area, I'll just speak for myself, that this is an area that I struggle with in all aspects? You know, when it comes to Taekwondo, specifically the practice of Taekwondo, I actually think I have a great deal of self-control, mm-hmm. like over my body mm-hmm. and my movements, and everything's very deliberate.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to eating properly or like being mindful of my screen time or indulging in things that are less healthy for me, like mm-hmm. binge watching TV and mm-hmm. stuff like that, I default to some of those things as a means of comfort mm-hmm. and it feels like self-care. It feels like it's good for me, but it's not really.
Right.
And how it applies to the relationship, I feel like sometimes I just blurt out whatever I'm thinking or feeling in that moment without processing it, without being mindful of how it's going to land. Or sometimes, without, I guess, just allowing the space to feel whatever I'm feeling and then let it pass mm-hmm. before I address it. So I guess that's where I think self-control would come in handy a little bit more for
me. Yeah, well, it's that idea of just being a master of your own impulses.
Right.
You know, and I think for both of us, this is one where I think as people, where we struggle with this one both personally and together, mm-hmm. you know, and often when I think of self-control, I think about exactly those things. I think about like those habits, you know, diet, exercise, mm-hmm. you know, putting down my phone, not like just those little impulse control things on a daily basis. But I have to say, I don't usually think of self-control in terms of a relationship and what that means, mm-hmm. you know? And so how do you view that? Like, what does that mean to have self-control in a relationship outside of like diet, exercise, like those external things?
Well, like I said, for me, it's controlling the impulse to just speak my mind. And if I'm feeling upset with you in the mm-hmm. moment or frustrated by something, rather than just blurting that out and sort of starting conflict, creating conflict, mm-hmm. I could take a moment, breathe through it, wait and see if it passes, or just like wait till the initial intense feeling goes away and then address it in a calmer, more rational way.
Sure.
So that's where I feel like I could, that's where I feel like it applies to how I approach the relationship.
Sure.
I noticed on our day of silence when we couldn't speak at all, mm-hmm. there were little things that would come up, not many, but little things that were like, I'd be frustrated by something and I couldn't really say anything about it. And I was like, well, I guess it doesn't matter. And it would go away. I would just let it go. Mm-hmm. So some of it is like controlling my impulse to speak on that thing right away, because then I give it voice, then I give it weight. And I think that if I were to just give it some space, mm-hmm. I might actually be able to train my thoughts into feeling like that thing is actually not that big a deal. Does that make sense?
Sure.
That it's a matter of not just controlling how I behave outwardly, but how I approach conflict internally.
Uh-huh.
Self-control over my thoughts as well.
So like, would you say like that process for you feels like very much like you sort of have a feeling and then you verbalize it?
Yes.
Like, and there's not like a filter that necessarily goes through. You go feeling to words. Okay. I love that, because like I have this sort of opposite, like we were talking about this, like I have a great deal of self-control when it comes to emotions. I don't, you know, I think this is it can be a trap, and I think it's very common. I think especially for some men, this idea of being sort of stoic, you know, this sort of emotional, steadfast. There's this idea of like, that's like an admirable thing, you know, to have control over one's emotions. And I feel very much in control of my emotions. And so I don't have like big, I don't like blow up very often. I don't have like outbursts of temper. Like I've just always been pretty mild and easygoing. But when I think self-control in terms of emotions, I think I have to have exhibit self-control by how I monitor the release of those emotions. Because sometimes I just like, oh no, I'm not going to go there. That's cool. And I hold it back and I suppress it down until then I can't. So when I do lose self-control of my emotions, it's a big deal.
You're like an instant pot.
Yeah.
The steam just comes flying.
And then you're like always like, whoa, like what is this?
Where's this been
for the last 2 months, you know, or week or day? And so where I have to put self-control into practice is that sort of slow release, you know, that gradual release of that. I don't have to explode, but I do have to control that emotion and then like let it out in a reasonable way as things are happening.
Well, not just control it, but to sort of become, to develop awareness of it and understand it.
Yeah.
Because control, you just, when you said the word control just now, you did that motion of pressing it down.
Pushing it down.
But that's not what you want to do, right?
You want to like, you want to like let it out.
You want to acknowledge it, understand it, express it, and then move on.
It's like a spillway on a dam, right? You've got to, you can't let the water level or the, you know, it gets so high that it's going to overflow and top over the dam. You got to like let out the sides. You got to like let some pressure release in a gradual way. And I think it's interesting because I never would have thought about self-control in that way. You know, it's like, you know, I think about it, it's like it's containing the explosion.
Yeah.
It's containing the violent, the angry, the flare up, the unmeasured, unhinged, all of those things that are scary. But I think a lot of times we don't talk about self-control from the mindset of like taking something in, holding it, accepting it, and then letting it
and releasing
it. And I think that's self-control in the most ideal, perfect way it could be, is that process.
I think that's a really American problem. Mm-hmm. And I see it all the time everywhere. You know, I work with artists and I don't always expect them to be so calm and collected and quote unquote together because they're artists. So I just figure artists emote. Like we know how to access our feelings and express them because that's what we do for our job. And I'm constantly surprised at how often, you know, I mean, obviously it can't be complete chaos at work and we can't all just be like running around crying and screaming at each other. But there's, I think, a balance. You know, Brené Brown talks about vulnerability and I my deep, deep hope and wish for this country is that we practice more of that and that we are able to acknowledge our feelings and talk about them in a way that doesn't feel threatening or uncomfortable or off-putting to others. Because I think there's a deep, deep fear that if we let people know where we are, how we're doing, that something horrible is going to happen, that we will be viewed poorly. And particularly women, I think. Women are, in the workplace that I've noticed are very like, nope, everything's good. And like they're dealing with insane stuff like nobody reasonably should be doing well, particularly in 2020, this last year. I keep thinking, you know, on these Zoom calls, it's like, we all know we're all having a miserable time. Obviously we have to keep going.
Let's
acknowledge where we all are right now. And we'll be able to keep going a little bit easier, I think.
Ooh, I think another element of self-control that can be challenging is if you're type A personality, because that's also in this country viewed as a very like positive thing. A person who has their shit together, you know, they're exhibiting great self-control. They've got schedules and tasks and systems and all of these things.
Right.
But man, if you've ever been around like a person who's type, like really type A, and something goes wrong with that process, it's like, I've worked with people and I have had colleagues like this. It's like, it's, they cease to function. You know, they can't manage the unplanned for, the unprepared for.
It's the lack of control.
Yeah.
So self-control.
Go the other way.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of, you know, I mean, and that's like the person you'll ask, like what seems, if you've ever had that moment, like the, what seems to be a simple ask, you know, if you like, hey, can we just redo the food prep schedule for the week? And then you get that look of like, are you freaking kidding me? Or you just can't, we can't just redo the food schedule. And you're like, oh, why not? Like, let's just like shift some things around. And they're like, no. Like, you know, and like, that's a real thing that can happen. Self-control in the, like too much self-control that's so rigid.
But it also means controlling how you handle conflict.
Yeah.
In whatever form, right? Maybe that conflict is your schedule getting messed with. How do you deal with that?
Right.
That's self-control.
Yeah.
How do you react when someone confronts you with something uncomfortable?
Yeah. And it's the impulse when someone says, can we just change this? And you've spent hours doing it. It's the way you always do it. And your initial reaction is like, hell no, I can't change this. This is the way I have this whole system here for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, and those things are, I think, tough to navigate as a couple. You know, I think especially since we both struggle with self-control in different areas, it's really hard to find the thing that works.
But we also both struggle with the need to be in control.
Yeah. We definitely both like to be the one with the plan. And we're oftentimes not great at doing the plan together. Sometimes it's like, I don't know, it's like, let's just go off into two separate rooms, come up with a plan, and then share our plan and be like, oh, okay, and then go from there.
That's what I try to do. I try to share the plan.
Terrible at it.
But you just quietly do your own plan.
Like, oh, that's great. Yeah. Over here doing something completely different on the side. Oh, it's terrible. Okay.
Okay. So that's self-control.
Yeah.
Next we have, this is an interesting one, indomitable spirit.
This is my favorite one.
It's a good one.
It's my favorite one.
It's one that it's like, what does that really, what does it mean?
To have indomitable spirit.
So essentially it's finding strength from within. It's constant and it allows you to flourish and be your best self and accomplish more outwardly. Mm-hmm. Outwardly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So finding that strength from within so that you can accomplish great things, you know, on the outside.
Yes.
Essentially. So that, I mean, I like that for Taekwondo. That feels like, you know, the way one of the other students in class described it is like that flame that's constantly lit, that you've got the fire. It's the passion. And it reflects outwardly, which I think is a beautiful image.
Mm-hmm.
How does this apply
to marriage?
To you,
to me,
in life marriage. And in marriage.
I think for me, like the way I have viewed indomitable spirit is it's that when I first heard it, I viewed it as that sort of like this is like the one that's like you don't let anything get you down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing's gonna get you down. You rise above. You know, you have this spirit that just can't be
quashed,
right? Yeah. And then I started thinking about like, well, what are the moments in my life where I've shown the most indomitable spirit? And like, I think indomitable spirit is something that requires a lot of action, but a lot of internal action, right? I view that as like that ability to say, look around you and being like, the world that I want is not here. Mm-hmm. The world that I want there to be doesn't exist. So what can I do internally to be in a better position to help make that world manifest?
Be the change.
To be the change, right? And like, I think that is like the thing that got us through our hardest time. Like for me, you know, like it was that feeling of, I don't have a marriage. I don't have the marriage that I want. I don't have the marriage that I expected. It's clear that she's looking at me and I'm not the husband she wants. And I had that sense of like, well, I can't be the husband she wants by just being what she wants. I have to be what I want. Mm-hmm. And I have to fix myself and be like, well, what are the things that are leading me to act this way? What are the things that are making me feel and do and say the things that I do that aren't ever what I pictured for myself and aren't what I view for myself? And it's that raw moment of being like, I'm not living up to what I want for me, and then going after that. But at first it involved just like tearing it down. And so I love that idea of like the little internal flame. Mm-hmm. But the internal flame to me is the like the part that just like burns you up. It's the part that burns up that
depletes
you. Like it takes all the stuff that's like broken and old and dead and useless and burns that away so you can like step forward as a new sense of self, right? It's that idea of the phoenix. It's the fact that like every day you're a new version of you. Like you are the version of you that has never existed before.
Right.
And from moment to moment, the old you is dead. Mm-hmm. And like that's the most freeing thing I ever have felt or heard or internalized for myself. And like to me, that's what indomitable spirit means. In a marriage, it's the ability to first say, what do I want to make true externally? Mm-hmm. And instead of being like, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this externally. No. To say, great, I'm going to look inside and I'm going to tear every bullshit thing down and rebuild it, knowing that that is what will lead me.
Yeah.
Maybe not even to the thing I'm actually wanting. It might lead me somewhere different.
Yeah.
But it will put me in a better place to have what's coming to me, I guess. Like you know, sure. you get what you deserve.
Sure.
In terms of how you comport yourself.
I love that, because to me it feels, it's very different, but it's not. I mean, it's that flame to me represents what's absolute and true about me, who I am. And there are times where I sense that flame is very small. And there are other times where it's a little bigger. The times in our relationship where I feel like I used it the most were when I was seeking to find myself internally. And that was probably during our time in Vegas, when everything external felt like it was completely out of my control and spinning out, and I just felt completely lost in my surroundings and, you know, with everything, with you and everything that was happening around me. All I could do was figure out who I am and tap into what's true about me and explore that and add a little kerosene to that lamp or whatever to light that flame a little brighter. And I think the work that I did there, I did that yoga teacher training. It was like a 3-month really intensive yoga philosophy and of course yoga practice course. I started, you know, teaching theater and getting back in touch with my passion and craft, and I started to just like pay more attention to who I was and what I wanted. And so that when we did leave Las Vegas, I had a much clearer sense of that. I don't know that I handled the assertion of myself, my newfound self, in a way that was healthy for us, but I couldn't begin to bring anything authentic to us until I did that inner work and found some of that inner strength.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we're saying the same thing, but it's a very different approach we took.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or a different way of looking at it anyway.
I think there's definitely that perspective of like, I mean, our gender, right? You know, I'd say like as a, you know, straight white guy, I've been told a lot of things and shown a lot of things about how the world works and what you deserve and what you don't. Like, there's a lot of things like layered in there. And I think you come to this point where you're like, well, do I A, agree with these things? Do I believe these things? There's things that I say that I say those words, I'm like, I don't know where that came from. Mm-hmm. I don't even really believe that. I don't want to believe that. Mm-hmm. How do I unwind that? So I think for me, I think there's a lot of deconstructing really, really key beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, for value systems, religious hangups, like
sure.
all sorts of things that you just like, I don't need that anymore. Mm-hmm. That's dead wood. I don't get rid of that.
Yeah.
You know, but like in your case, society does a lot of like, setting the boundary for you and mm-hmm. saying what's acceptable and what's not. And, you know,
you feel very penned
right.
in, penned in, is
right.
that a thing? Yeah. It's very oppressive.
Right. And so yours feels more like a fire erupting.
From inside.
Oof, whereas yeah. mine feels more like the sort of like clearing out
Yeah.
things that don't need to be there anymore. And so I just find it fascinating that it's like we're both like, this flame idea is really good.
Yeah.
But we view it as this very different thing. Yours yeah. is like explosive and mine is like purifying.
Mine doesn't feel explosive, but I would like for it to
but,
feel
But, you know, that idea of a flame growing
yeah.
and becoming bright and lighting
stronger.
A truer path for you.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, mine's like, I look around, I'm like, I have seen no way out of this dark, terrible thing. And then it all burns down and suddenly you can like see. Like, mm-hmm. I can, it's, the way is cleared for me a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. It's just really interesting.
I love it so much.
Yeah. Okay. Next one.
Courtesy. We all kind of have a sense of what courtesy means. But, you know, obviously being polite and respectful, mm-hmm. Do unto others, that sort of thing. In class, it's being respectful of your sabenim, mm-hmm. your teacher and taekwondo master, and also the sort of respecting the ranks within mm-hmm. the
respecting the space
class and the space. Yeah, you bow and you enter the space.
The respecting your uniform, respecting mm-hmm. the procedures and respecting the art form of it itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like. I think the coolest thing about all martial arts is that idea that it is this sort of, it's this thing rooted in self-defense. And obviously there can be a great deal of violence in it, but it's really rooted in this internal discipline. And mm-hmm. It's like the courtesy to comport yourself in a certain way mm-hmm. because you are taking on this responsibility.
Yes.
Right.
And therefore respect for your opponent as mm-hmm. well. And only doing what is absolutely necessary.
Right. It's a respect for life. It's a respect for boundaries. It's a respect for space and distance and deed and word. I think often we think about courtesy from in terms of etiquette.
Yeah.
You know, like courtesy is etiquette. And yes,
when we think of etiquette, we think, you know,
like Emily Post, you know, little yeah. fork, big fork.
It becomes a little, I don't know.
Gross. You know.
Yeah. I mean, there is something to be said for that. My stepmother's from the Midwest and there's a lot of sort of courtesy and etiquette that she grew accustomed to. And probably my dad, too, mm-hmm. having Southern parents. And it was just a little different. You know, I was also raised by my mom, who was from Denver. Not that we're heathens, Wild West, you know. but it's, you know, I had to kind of adjust to that depending
right.
on which household I was in. And it's a different thing. Like,
well,
this is just how things are done.
Yeah.
But
etiquette is cultural.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
courtesy
should be universal.
Is a universal thing. Right. And so it can look very different. And it's really easy to like look at things like, well, that person's rude. And it's not that they're rude, it's their culture is rooted in a different form of etiquette or a different way that we concern ourselves with etiquette. You know, I've met some very, very you know, wealthy, prominent people who have a great sense of like the way things that should be done. Like, you know, we lived on the Upper East Side in New York for a time, and we spent, and you just see people who clearly have ideas of like etiquette and manners and things like that. And they're also like the rudest people I've ever met.
Entitled.
You know, entitled and privileged. And it's, you know, and then you'll, you know, meet someone else who doesn't have like the, any like the foggiest idea of like how to set a 10-piece place setting or what to do, but they're way more polite, courteous,
respectful,
you know. Yeah. And so I think the idea of courtesy as a principle, as opposed to a set of lists and rules and procedures that must be followed
about
how to behave in certain situations.
Yeah. So you know, how does that apply to a relationship?
You know, I think it's the idea of being polite and respectful of each other. I think, and I view courtesy much more through the lens of like words, mm-hmm. as opposed to action, as opposed to deeds. And I think that's something where we've had conflict
I'm
around that. You know, yeah.
I exhibit a lot of courtesy in deed, mm-hmm. but less in word.
Right.
And because of that, I tend to expect that mm-hmm. reciprocated.
Right.
But you're kind of the opposite there. And part of me is like, well, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think we could both find a balance maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's that you mentioned this the other day, this idea of like the golden rule, how the golden rule in a marriage is really challenging.
It really is. I mean, going back to the love languages episode where it's like, well, maybe I'm trying to do unto Nate as I would wish him to do unto me. So I'm doing the dishes a lot and cleaning up after him.
Nate doesn't care about that.
Nate doesn't care about that stuff. I do.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't quite work that way.
Right. It's like the golden rule with any random person you meet.
Great.
Right.
Absolutely.
Good, steadfast, tried and true.
Yep.
Never fails.
Yep.
You know, but when you're with somebody and you're in a relationship together, that doesn't work anymore because it's too nuanced. You're engaging with each other in not just the small interactions in life, like the fleeting ones. You're interacting with each other on all of it all the time. Right. You know, there's nuance there and it's difficult and you've got history now.
Would you remember like earlier in the relationship, you don't do this anymore. You haven't really, this hasn't been an issue, but you've said, you know, sometimes it just feels like you care way more about what other people think of you than what I think of you. And this kind of thing would come out, particularly if we were going to a housewarming party, mm-hmm. or maybe not a housewarming party, but just a gathering at someone's, a dinner party. And I would say, okay, we need to bring a bottle of wine. Like we need to at least bring a bottle of wine or something for them. And you'd be like, why? They didn't say to bring anything. Why do I need to bring something? I'm like, well, that's just, it's a nice thing to do. And, you know, these things, and it would, I think you would view that as sort of me going out of my way for other people when it didn't feel like I was doing the same kind of thing. Not that you would want me to gift you a bottle of wine,
I mean,
but you weren't necessarily recognizing what I was trying to demonstrate in terms of my love and respect for you. It didn't look like a bottle of wine. It looked like me picking up after you, but of course you didn't recognize it because that's not what you needed.
Right.
Does that make sense? So like the way I behave to the outside world to show my respect and courtesy for them is going to look different than how it looks in a relationship.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
You're looking at me a little baffled.
I'm a little baffled. But I think it's more, I think I always viewed those, that is more like the, it's not that I was feeling like I wasn't getting the same sort of treatment. It was more that interplay of like doing nice things because you want to versus doing nice things because you're obligated to. And that was where I was always confused by that.
It's a balance for me because sometimes it's like, we should do this because mm-hmm. this is what we should do. And there is a sense of obligation, but also I like doing that stuff. And you don't understand that because you don't like doing that stuff. But I do. Even if I feel a little obligated, there are times where I really want to, you know, bring a card to this person. Yeah. I really want yeah. to do this.
And like, I didn't grow up in a house where we did like dinner party things where that just wasn't
yeah.
a thing.
Yeah.
You had sure. people over and they came over and you did all of the stuff because you had them over.
Yeah.
And no one brought anything. You know, so it was just a very different thing. And I just didn't yeah. understand it. I was like, wait, I thought they invited us over.
Right.
We can invite them over.
Well, so, okay. So taking a bottle of wine to yeah. a dinner party or whatever, right. a gathering is an example of courtesy or etiquette, right? right. It's an example of a right. cultural thing mm-hmm. that I grew up with that you didn't.
Yeah.
But I'm demonstrating courtesy and respect in a very different way in our relationship.
Yeah.
And comparing those two things are like apples to oranges.
Right.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Essentially. Okay. Anything else about courtesy?
I think the idea of, I mean, for me more than anything, and being, I think of courtesy in our relationship, I think it does have to be much more with the other person in mind. Like it can't be courtesy as you see it.
Yeah.
It does have to be courtesy as the other sees it.
You
know, it's trickier. You know?
Definitely.
It's not just about like, oh, saying the right thing, being courteous. It's that being... It's being mindful. It's being aware. It's taking the time to learn, you know, what are the things you like versus what are the things I like? What are the things you expect in terms of courtesy versus what I expect?
Yeah.
And I think it's easy for us to act it out the way we expect it instead of vice versa.
Sure.
And I think that's where like the structure of Taekwondo is really good. It gives us a sense, I think it does give us a sense of shared like language, some shared sense of decorum.
Yeah.
Right? Of how you interact with each other.
Yeah.
There's a bit like you, then me, a give and take.
Yeah.
A shared thing, a flow, an advancing and a retreating. There's like a flow to how things happen in like the actual practice of Taekwondo that's good.
Yeah.
In terms of showing and demonstrating courtesy to each other.
Yeah, and I think most couples experience this. You both came from different backgrounds mm-hmm. for the most part. You have different ways of viewing the world and how you interact within it. This has been really nice for us to kind of find a common,
yeah,
I guess, language.
Yeah.
Physical and verbal. Great. So the final tenet is integrity.
Ooh, which is the idea of being honest and having strong moral principles you live by.
It's a big one. I would say I have not always been in like full integrity in our relationship.
Explain.
Well, I mean, there are times I was deceptive on purpose, right? Mm-hmm. I kept things from you for various reasons.
Right.
I was ashamed or I didn't want to hurt your feelings or, for all the reasons we do hide
right.
things from people. I didn't want to deal with the consequences of it, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, and when I did not live in integrity in our relationship, it always ended poorly.
Mm-hmm.
It always ended worse than the times when I was just completely forthright and honest with you as to the best of my ability.
I love that you made that just that statement of like living in integrity. Because I think it's easy to look at integrity is that it's like, well, these are my principles. These are the things I believe. But as we all know, it's one thing to have principles. It's another to live by those principles, right? Right. So I love that you said that because it really is that idea of like, I have principles. I have a code of ethics. I have a code of how things should be and how I should comport myself and what's my line in the sand and the thing that I will not do. And then inevitably in life, you do that thing. You cross that line, you betray your principles. Mm-hmm. And in true integrity is then identifying that and then owning up to it and being honest about it. And right. I think that's when we have betrayed our own principles, those are the moments where we are like, oh shit, mm-hmm. I have to, and that's where you want to like keep it all inside and not own up to it because you know, then not only do you risk being called out for the mistake, but then you get called out for being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
A sanctimonious jerk. You know, all of those, you know, high and mighty.
Yeah.
You know.
Holier than thou.
Yeah, all of those things. And it's an awful position to be in, but that living in integrity means owning up to those things, mm-hmm. you know, and that's not easy to do.
Nobody wants to do that. Because
it is vulnerable and it really does invoke those feelings of shame and guilt. And it's really, really, yeah. it's really awful. So it's
interesting too, because yes, all of those things happen and it's really difficult to be in that place of vulnerability and own up to that stuff. Then I think about the alternative where you're definitely not living in integrity. For example, I'm going to go out to drinks with somebody that I kind of think is cute and I'm not going to tell Nate about it. I'm going to tell him that I'm going out with my girlfriends or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've not done this particular thing, by the way. I've done other things. But and instead of just saying, I'm going to go out to drinks, he's kind of cute, and then we could talk about it.
Right.
I just go out. And then later, you find out that that's not what I did. So first, there's the initial reaction of you went out with somebody you thought was cute. But on top of that is you lied to me. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that is the uncertainty and the mistrust of what else is she doing?
Right.
Is this worse than I think it is?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you might have my defensive reaction of, well, you know, it's just you overreact whenever I want to do this. So I feel like I have to, you know, and then I double down.
Right.
And so not only do you have like the initial issue that needs to be dealt with, but you've got at least three or four other things that just get layered on top of it. And how do you even begin to sift through all of that?
Absolutely. And it's really, you know, and I think what's also helpful is when you start living with integrity and like really demonstrating that, I think that it also becomes easier for your partner to help you keep your integrity. And I think that is a hard thing to do, because it's one thing to be like, I'm calling you out because I don't agree with the thing that you've done because of my code of ethics.
Right.
It's a whole other thing to be like, I'm calling you out because I know your code of ethics and you have violated your code of ethics. And that is a whole other level of like evisceration, right? I mean, it feels like you've been emotionally gutted when your partner and you know each other so well that not only do you, you know, you know that they understand what you expect of them, mm-hmm. but that they know what you expect of yourself.
Yeah.
Oof. Oh, there's nothing worse.
Yeah.
But if you actually are, if you can get to that point where your partner has, you know, with tact and with grace and with love and appreciation and all those things, but is able to actually come to you and confront you and say, I know you're not living up to what you hold yourself to, and I'm here to help you identify that. I'm here to help you rectify that, and I'm here to help you like reconcile and make amends for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the person you want. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, yeah,
we don't... It's not fun, but that's the person you want.
That's what in you life, want. And, you know? And particularly as we know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. right? That's what we expect from a relationship
right.
anymore. Yeah. It's a tall order.
It is a tall order, you know, and if you yourself can't live in integrity and walk through life being honest about not just when you keep it, but when you lose your integrity, you know, then it's really difficult for your partner to know when there's a breach, when things are falling apart, and help you rein it in.
And that's where I think some of these other tenets come into play, the idea of modesty, mm-hmm. right? And being humble enough to mm-hmm. know when you've crossed that line and
absolutely.
To verbalize it, to address it. And to persevere through that discomfort. Mm-hmm. What I love about all of these tenets is that they're great to break apart and analyze on their own, but they really, really go together,
right?
You know, to make a sort of complete,
yeah,
human. They're working together, and if one of them slips, then you'll start to see,
yeah,
everything else kind of.
And I love that they help each other out. Like if you're slipping in one, you can use one of the others to help you get it back. You right. know, if you're losing a sense of integrity, you can really focus on courtesy. You can really focus on being modest. You know, mm-hmm. you can engage others to help you overcome a deficit in one of the others, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, you know, it's what I love about these tenets is that they're a framework for yourself, for the self that you can then use to engage with others. And I love them. I love that about the tenets is it is purely this system that you can work internally that then you can enact externally, mm-hmm. you know? And if you have a shared understanding of what those are, all the better, because then you're having the same conversation. And yeah. like when you say courtesy, I know what that means now.
Yeah.
When I say integrity, you know what that means now.
Yeah.
And we're able to, I think, get to the real root of something faster and easier. Mm-hmm. And it's helped us deal with conflict, mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of ways. You know, it's cool that Taekwondo is a system of conflict management, yeah. right? And it has that flow to it. And it is that it's not peaceful always. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes mistakes are made. Sometimes you hit each other. Sometimes you mess up. Sometimes you perform the wrong move at the wrong time, mm-hmm. you know, and all of those things can happen. But because you're engaging in that process together, you're able to manage this sort of art of conflict a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's true. It's like, you know, marriage is a martial art in that way, and that you're in kind of constantly contending.
It's a dance
with each other. It's a dance. Yeah. You're not out to, you know, pulverize each other, you know, and you're not out there to sidekick them into submission. Yeah. You're in there to strengthen each other. You're in there to, like, you know, you bang your forearm and it bruises, but mm-hmm. it gets stronger and stronger.
And you develop awareness mm-hmm. for the next time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what's too far. You know what's too, you know, like, you know where the lines are. You mm-hmm. know where it's just, it's been a really powerful thing in our lives this last year, especially mm-hmm. to help manage this craziness. Yeah. And I wish I can see why it's so good for young people, especially. Oh, I was like, I wish I would have done a martial art as a kid, because I feel like I would have figured this stuff out a lot sooner.
It's nothing I was ever interested in. Mm-hmm. I mean, the main reason I got interested in it this time was because I knew you were, and I thought it'd be a fun thing to do together. Yeah. And I thought it'd be good for me.
I just wanted to be a Ninja Turtle. That was all I wanted, you know? I was like, yeah. will I be allowed to have nunchucks? And they're like, my parents are like, no martial arts for you.
It might have been really good for you.
Yeah.
But here we are, and it's never too late.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So we hope that, you know, whether or not you have practiced or are practicing a martial art, that some of these tenets are useful and apply mm-hmm. in your lives and relationships. And let us know if, you know, what your thoughts are on that. We appreciate we've been getting some great feedback on social media. If you're not following us yet, we're on Facebook at Messy Marriage Podcast and Instagram at A Messy mm-hmm. Marriage Podcast. Leave us a comment, tag us in something you think might be relevant, or just send us an email, lessnotperfect@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we're just really grateful in the new year to be moving forward with perseverance and all of the other tenets.
Modesty, perseverance, self-control.
Indomitable spirit.
Courtesy.
Courtesy, integrity.
Love it.
There they are. And extra thanks to our Sabanim, Eric Davidson, and our other classmates.
Absolutely.
Stace and Jay.
And with that, yes. Cheery up. Kunye.
Kunye. Bye, y'all. for listening to Twice as Less Not Perfect.
Want to hear more about what it takes to have a messy marriage? Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
And share us with your friends and family.
You can follow us on all the socials. Find us on Facebook at Messy Marriage Podcast.
And Instagram at A Messy Marriage Podcast.
Have a question or an idea for an episode? Email us at lessnotperfect@gmail.com.
And remember, when it comes to marriage,
mess is more.